law enforcement response at Robb Elementary School on May 24, 2022, and in the hours and days after, was a failure that should not have happened. We hope to honor the victims and the survivors by working together to try to prevent anything like this from ever happening again, here or anywhere.
Pacifica Radio, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso and Eugene's KEPW, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Fairmont, West Virginia on WEFR, up in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing the globe and usually hosted by Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. But Brad is still out sick with COVID today. So you've got guest host Nicole Sandler of The Nicole Sandler Show and me, Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. Hey, Nicole.
Hey, Desi. COVID is making a resurgence, unfortunately.
Yes.
Brad is out. And, you know, on Thursdays, my regular guest for the last dozen years or so is Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com. Mm. And he got COVID on his way back from India.
Sorry to hear that.
So same kind of thing with a rebound case as well. He was feeling a little better after taking Paxlovid. And then he said he's feeling worse than he has up to this point. So,
wow. I'm so sorry to hear that, and I have been hearing from a lot of people who have avoided COVID so far, but this new wave, I guess because so many people have relaxed their efforts at protecting themselves and others, so a lot of people are getting it now, which is a real shame. So
it is a shame.
Be careful out there.
Definitely. And the newest booster, they're saying, is not actually a booster at all. It's basically a new vaccine that's been updated to include the latest variants. And I got to tell you, I've gotten each and every booster. I've gotten them all. And in the first ones, I had a reaction each time. I did not have a reaction to this last one. So it's my way of encouraging people. If you haven't gotten it yet, go get this new booster.
Yes.
The compliance rate is very low. And it could be because you have people like the idiot governor of my former state of Florida going around. He actually said at a campaign stop the other night that getting the booster makes you more liable to come down with COVID, which is an outright lie.
Oh, my God. That's a terrible lie. That's going to get people hurt.
No kidding. No kidding. And actually today, coincidentally, in the Senate, there's a hearing on long COVID. It's in the HELP Committee, the Health, Education, Labor, and I think P stands for Pension Committee. And if you look at the video, it's at help.senate.gov/hearings. All of the long COVID advocates are all wearing high quality masks. And the explanation is that they understand we're in a surge and each reinfection increases the risk of developing long COVID, as if regular COVID isn't bad enough.
Right. So it's definitely important to get that booster. I should note that both Brad and I got the booster, the latest booster. But, you know, this new strain can evade it. So yeah. It is good and helpful to get those boosters and to take all of the antiviral medications that are available to you, because it does help lessen the severity and duration of an infection and also prevent hospitalization, which is especially important for people in those high risk categories.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I'll say it again and again. I have not gotten COVID, and I refuse to say yet because I don't plan on getting it at all.
Good.
But
good.
I'm sure you and Brad didn't plan on getting it either. So
true. We did not. But, you know, it does happen. And so, you know, again, just maintain those precautions and let's try to help prevent it from getting to anybody else.
Yes, please. So there's other news going on today. In fact, well, you know, we don't even hear about these shootings anymore. Apparently, there was another shooting late yesterday afternoon inside a mall in Kansas City, Missouri, because six people were injured. So I guess, you know, that doesn't even warrant coverage. And I bring this up today because at least the Justice Department finally today is speaking about the Uvalde shooting massacre. I don't even know what to call them anymore. So Merrick Garland had a press conference this morning that you listened to?
Yes. So the Washington Post reports it like this. The Justice Department issued a scathing report on Thursday describing the myriad failures of local police during the 2022 shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. A damning 575-page catalog of confusion, lack of courage, and their deadly consequences. 19 school children and two teachers were killed in the attack. Now, the report was highly critical of local police commanders. It also criticized state law enforcement, saying its officers added to the disorganization and confusion that contributed to the 77 minutes that elapsed between the young gunman bursting into the school and when police finally stormed the classroom where he had been hiding. The report traces step by step how police officers first arrived at the school but then quickly retreated in the face of gunfire and decided to treat the gunman in the room with dozens of children as a barricaded suspect and wait for backup. Now, overall, the report concluded that local authorities were not prepared for the crisis and were unable to give families of the victims accurate information. The top line conclusion is that the Uvalde law enforcement did not use accepted best practices for active shooter situations.
Right.
And the report faulted local leadership for failing to train their officers in best practices for active shooters. And here's what in the press conference, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, he detailed the specific findings of the report and gave a long list of recommended actions. But this portion of his remarks is what I found most telling and moving.
As I told families and survivors last night, the department's review concluded that a series of major failures in leadership, in tactics, in communications, in training, and in preparedness were made by law enforcement leaders and others responding to the mass shooting at Robb Elementary. As a result, 33 students and three of their teachers, many of whom have been shot, were trapped in a room with an active shooter for over an hour as law enforcement officials remained outside. The victims and survivors of the mass shooting at Robb Elementary on May 24th, 2022, deserve better. First and foremost, the 19 children and their two teachers who were stolen from their loved ones should be here today. They never should have been targeted by a mass shooter. We must never forget the shooter's heinous act that day. And the victims and survivors should never have been trapped with that shooter for more than an hour as they waited for their rescue. The families of the victims and survivors deserve more than incomplete, inaccurate, and conflicting communications about the status of their loved ones. This community deserved more than misinformation from officials during and after the attack. Responding officers here in Uvalde, who also lost loved ones and who still bear the emotional scars of that day, deserve the kind of leadership and training that would have prepared them to do the work that was required. Our children deserve better than to grow up in a country where an 18-year-old has easy access to a weapon that belongs on the battlefield, not in a classroom. And communities across the country and the law enforcement officers who protect them deserve better than to be forced to respond to one horrific mass shooting after another. But that is the terrible reality that we face. And so it is a reality that every law enforcement agency in every community across the country must be prepared for. No community and no law enforcement agency should have to face that threat alone. That is why we came to Uvalde, and that is why we are releasing this report.
Again, that was U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland in a press conference on Thursday morning announcing the release of the Department of Justice's report, basically detailing what happened in the Uvalde shooting back in 2022 and best practices and what can be done to help prevent these horrific responses from happening again.
Yeah, well, we know, Desi, what can be done to prevent them from happening again. But unfortunately, we have a Republican Party who values guns over human lives.
Yes. They're a bunch of mass shooting enthusiasts, apparently.
Yeah. And I don't get it. The thing is, you know, the AR-15, it's a weapon of war. It's a machine created to kill. That's it. And the thing is, we've seen so many like animations and different features on the damage that bullets from this type of gun does. I don't see how any hunter could possibly eat the meat from the animals they kill with this weapon, because it basically hollows out the inside of whatever it hits.
Yeah, it's not a weapon for hunting, and everybody knows that it's a weapon of war. It is a weapon intended to kill as many people as quickly as possible.
Yep.
Everyone knows it, and I think that it's obviously disingenuous for gun enthusiasts to claim that it's for hunting when they know it's not even for self-defense. It is for trying to kill a lot of people all at once. And unfortunately, the Republican Party is captured by the gun lobby, and I think that for a lot of, at least, you know, Republicans and especially MAGA Republicans, you know, they are more interested in their tribal affiliation. You know, my group says that this is the most important thing, so that's what I'm going to pretend that, you know, the Second Amendment overcomes all other amendments of the Constitution, all other rights, like, you know, the right to live in peace and not live in fear. So, you know, we are stuck with that from the Republican Party, at least until enough people get out and actually vote that in a way that is commensurate with the polls, because the polls show that the vast majority of Americans want all of these common sense gun safety reform laws that have been proposed by Democrats.
Right.
And yet we don't have enough people turning out to vote to put, which is the first step to putting politicians in place in Congress and in local and state legislatures who will actually put those common sense gun safety reforms in place.
Right. And here's, you know, but there's another element that you would think would be on the side of people who want to see these weapons taken off the streets, and that is the complete neutering of the NRA. Wayne LaPierre last week or this week had stepped down finally because he's facing charges of fraud. The NRA is toothless now. It used to have a lot of money and a lot of power, and that's all been neutered. So I don't understand what forces
are keeping the Democrats from stepping up now when the other side is sort of wounded, right? To pass some meaningful legislation because there's no NRA now, you know, holding lord over the Republicans in Congress.
Yeah, it would be nice to see Democrats stepping up and again, I mean, really making a very big full court press in all legislatures to try to push this kind of thing from happening. But unfortunately, you know, with gerrymandering and voter suppression, there have been a lot of state legislatures that have stronger Republican majorities than they had even just 3 or 4 or 5 years ago and have been able to lock themselves into minority power, making it very difficult to dislodge them. So and in the Senate, you know, as we know, with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, they are not willing to get rid of the filibuster, even when it comes to stopping mass death caused by mass shooters.
Right.
So, I think it's being held back by so-called conservative Democrats who are not willing to take even the minimal effort to save lives.
Right. Right. So, action, no action, but at least Merrick Garland speaking out on it for all the good that does.
Maybe there will be local law enforcement and state law enforcement that will, you know, read this report and see where the points of failure were, because one of the things that he said was lack of training. And there's not just, you know, oh, let's do some active shooter training drills. It's also, you know, have you coordinated and done actual physical training with other law enforcement groups in your area so that you train together so you avoid the kind of miscommunication that happened in Uvalde, so that the state police are working, have done drills, actual physical drills with local police. And we've seen in other local mass shooting events where coordinated police response actually did succeed in minimizing the damage. So
right.
I think that sadly, these lessons had to be learned on the backs of the folks of Uvalde.
Yep.
Unfortunately. Yep. It's a horrible, horrible way to have to learn that. But
it's terrible.
But now there's a report at least that now details what happened and specific steps that can now be taken to by local law enforcement to make these responses more effective and safer for people. And and maybe someday we'll actually get the other half of the equation fixed, which is comprehensive gun safety reform. But that's
nice.
A decades long project.
Yeah. Desi Doyen, so that there's a lot of other news going on, by the way, just to pick up on what we were covering yesterday. Day 3 of the E. Jean Carroll defamation lawsuit number 2 is underway today in a New York courtroom.
Yep.
But Donald Trump notably is not there today. I guess he had enough of the judge reprimanding him and outbursts, and he was probably told, don't do that anymore. That's really not a good look. So
he's taking his toys and going home.
Yeah. Well, who knows where he's going? I don't think he's going home. He's going to play, presidential candidate again today somewhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, while that's going on, we're going to take a break in just a moment. And on the other side, I'm going to share with you another of my interviews. Yesterday, I had Kelly Carlin on my show. Mm. And the reason is she is the only child of the late, great George Carlin. Well, on YouTube last week, up popped an hour-long special called I'm Glad I'm Dead, George Carlin. And if you didn't know any better, you'd think this was new, like George Carlin material, but it isn't. It's some so-called comedian who used AI and fed into it all of George Carlin's stuff and attempted to spit out new material in George Carlin's voice. Well, yeah. Kelly Carlin is saying, oh, no, you don't. So she joins us. We'll hear that next on the broadcast.
Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Nicole Sandler, helping Desi Doyen hold down the fort here at the broadcast while Brad Friedman recovers from a second bout of COVID. I can't even imagine. I'm one of the few who hasn't gotten it. I won't say yet because I don't plan on getting it at all. But anyway, today I'm happy to share with you an interview from my show that I conducted yesterday with Kelly Carlin. She is the only child of comedian George Carlin, who we unfortunately lost back in 2008. But now some so-called comedians have decided that they have the right to use George Carlin's name and sort of his likeness and use the new technology of artificial intelligence to bring him back to life. So I was on the site formerly known as Twitter last week, and I saw Kelly Carlin tweet about this production. And here's her statement. She wrote, "My dad spent a lifetime perfecting his craft from his very human life, brain, and imagination. No machine will ever replace his genius. These AI-generated products are clever attempts at trying to recreate a mind that will never exist again. Let's let the artist's work speak for itself. Humans are so afraid of the void that we can't let what has fallen into it stay there. Here's an idea. How about we give some actual living human comedians a listen to? But if you want to listen to the genuine George Carlin, he has 14 specials that you can find anywhere." So, of course, I reached out to Kelly and invited her on the show, and she joined me on the Nicole Sandler show yesterday. I thought I'd share it with broadcast listeners today. Hey, Kelly.
It's so good to be here, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. I know I reached out to you last week when I saw the first, I saw your tweet about this, I guess, comedy duo, and I use the term loosely, producing a new YouTube special that they disgustingly to me called I'm Glad I'm Dead, George Carlin. So they took your dad's works, they fed it into an AI program and had it spit out a script. And one of these guys thinks he's a good impressionist and does his impersonation of your dad that isn't very good and puts it up as a 1-hour comedy special. What George Carlin would say now. Is that the premise of this?
I guess so. I'm still not clear on exactly how much autonomy the AI bot has, who chose the topic, who chose to choose George Carlin, who chose the topics within it. I guess it's one of the comedians' voices. It's just not clear. It's very opaque. I guess they put up a podcast yesterday with the AI bot reacting to the reaction to the special. I have really no desire to listen to it.
Yeah.
It's near the beginning of it. These comedians claim that this is autonomous, that they have nothing to do with this. They say they've signed NDAs, so they're not allowed to reveal anything about their relationship with the company behind the AI bot. I've seen reporting on that. I guess whoever is behind this, I get that they're fans. I get that they love my dad, clearly.
Many of us do.
Why else would you pick him, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, they did pick Tom Brady last year, which I do get. So maybe they just decided to go the opposite way, which is, you know, we want to make fun of Tom Brady and make him a stand-up. But then they went over to, let's go to the guy that we all revere the most. But that's my understanding, is that there is some AI bot that did all of this. And he's on a podcast with two actual humans. And That's where we are.
That, as I said earlier, there's a slippery slope in here that is really creepy.
Huge.
But for
huge.
You, so I saw your tweet and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And so I went in search, not in search of the YouTube thing, because I won't watch it. I did put it on, watch the beginning to hear their explanation of it, which was not much of an explanation. And I think I heard two alleged jokes, which were not funny. And I said, I can't do this, and turned it off. And instead, I started reading about it. There's a story at Vice.com just eviscerating it, saying, okay, do not watch this because, number one, it's not funny. And number two, it's insulting. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. And the author of the article said something like, well, that is an hour of my life I will never get back. And I can't get it out of my head. It was not George Carlin. And that's the thing. And you point out there's lots of George Carlin material out there. There are 14 specials that you can find. They're all over. And if you want to watch George Carlin, hear George Carlin himself, because this bad facsimile of it is not even, it's just, I think, capitalizing on his name. And you have the rights to his estate, to you control his goods, right? His works, his portfolio.
Yeah, I'm his sole heir. And between myself and my father's manager and business partner, there's something called the George Carlin Estate. And then there's another entity that owns all of his intellectual property, and was all of it was produced through that. And of course we control all of it.
And you never heard from these people who to ask you, we have this idea to do this thing. What do you think? Nothing.
No, of course not. No, I was as I was shocked by it on, I guess it dropped last Tuesday. I heard about it on Wednesday. And got my thoughts together and made my statement. And then ever since then, it's kind of been a snowball of talking to all sorts of people about it. No, they never approached us because they probably, I mean, we have a reputation for being very picky. It took 13 years or 12 years almost to decide who to make the documentary about my dad. We had a lot of people approach us. We've had a lot of people approach us about all sorts of projects. We're very, very protective. We try to use my father's high quality standards and our own intuition to, you know, of the people we're talking to. And there's no way I would have given permission for something like this. And they probably knew that. And this is a case of, I think technology in, you know, has a reputation to do this, to kind of step over the line over and over again and say, oops, or, oh, it's already happening. Too bad. Can't take it back now. You know, this is the arrogance of the tech world.
Right.
And so we're seeing it here also.
And as I mentioned to you, as you know, I know you were inundated with press requests, and I thank you so much for carving out a few minutes to talk to us, that during the SAG-AFTRA strike, my friend Dave Jolliffe came on the show a couple of times and brought along, you know, his good friends, Sean Astin and Francis Fisher. And one of the main issues that they were fighting for was to stave off, you know, the onslaught of AI, to protect their works for now and for posterity, to say that, no, you can't use my image and my voice and make me say and do things that I never did. That's not what you have the rights to. You have the rights to the work that I'm doing for you, but nothing further than that. And that was something that dragged the negotiations out longer, because the studios wanted that right. They wanted to be able to use like extras in perpetuity. They wanted so much. So Sean was very, you know, involved in the negotiations. And you said you've been speaking with him about this?
Yes, SAG reached out to me immediately. I got connected to Sean, some other people, Jolie Fisher, Justine Bateman, you know, people who are really concerned about this issue. They looped me into what they're doing, what the front is still, the legislation that's trying to be moved forward through Congress. You know, there's a lot of fronts here with this. And so it was great to be immediately, you know, kind of encircled by people who have been dealing with this issue and brought me up to speed very quickly. My dad obviously was a member of all the guilds because he was a writer and an actor and a performer and AFTRA for years and all of that. But So there's nothing technically they can do for me, and I'm not a member of any of those guilds right now myself, but it was just like, you know, it was like the circling of the wagons, like, we've got you and we understand this. And of course there's a lot of legacy. I mean, Sean Astin being one of them, certainly Julie Fisher also being
one of them, both of them,
a lot of us who are legacy holders. And, you know, I mean, that's the other thing too, is I reached out pretty quickly. I reached out to Zelda Williams. You know, I tweeted, put Melissa Rivers in there. I haven't reached out to her directly. But, you know,
Rain Pryor?
Rain, I've talked to Rain. She doesn't have any control over her dad's estate, unfortunately. But you know, because in the stand-up, if you listen far enough into it, maybe I only listened about 4 or 5 minutes. He lists the names of other comedians that they're going to come after. And it was like Joan, and it was Richard, and it was, you know, it was like just down the line. And it was like, oh, well, we're the tip of the spear. So, you know, so that's why I jumped in so quickly and so adamantly, to, you know, to be public about my feelings about this, but also really jumped into relationships with people who were also very, very concerned as artists, and especially as performing artists and, you know, screen artists, that there is, you know, they're coming for us on all fronts.
You know, so have you spoken with Sarah Silverman? Because she's been in the, on this fight since like the beginning. She was one of the people who sued immediately, because the way AI works, they have to feed it tons of information. And she said, you have no right to put my works into this program. I did not give permission. And in fact, she's even mentioned in this Washington Post editorial, in that, I guess, part of her, it says the judge's recent decision dismissing part of a copyright lawsuit brought by Sarah Silverman and others against Meta bears this out. What it bears out is, let me go back to the beginning of the paragraph. It says, all this means that it is likely to be easy for creators to challenge specific AI works that are manifest copies of their portfolios, or, as lawyers say, derivative works, a Peppa Pig imitation, for instance. But those creators will have a harder time bringing cases against systems that were trained on their work, yet don't closely imitate it. And that's what Sarah, I believe, sued over, that her work was being used to train these AI programs, and she never gave permission for that.
Yeah, I've been talking to the greatest legal minds in America the last few days, and that is part of why that stuff was thrown out of the case, was because there was too much distance between the original text of the book and what the AI came up with. And there was no way they could show the connection. What we're dealing with is basically a robbery of my father's personality and perspective. So it's a very different kind of a case. But, you know, I'm looking forward to reading this op-ed, because it sounds like what they're saying is, you know, we still need to deal with the fact that these machines are going to ingest all this material, and there has to be some copyright protection, because, you know, the reality of what's going to happen is the machine's going to start ingesting its own output. And that's part of my own fear, is that this is now labeled on YouTube as George Carlin, I'm glad I'm dead.
Yeah.
Which means that people can download pieces of it, put that up, they'll miss the whole impression part where they talk about the disclaimer. So then this could be thought of as George Carlin. And then even an AI bot could even think that this is George Carlin. And now the value, not only monetarily, but the value philosophically and entertainment wise of his perspective and his work is watered down by all of this.
Right.
So it's complicated, but it's it's really interesting that all this is coming up, and you know, there's a lot of litigation going on right now that the public will see more and more of how it's trying to shape and put these guardrails up so that artists, and you know, this is the other thing too, Nicole, this isn't just about creatives. This isn't just about people who have intellectual property output. This is about humans. Mm. These machines, we need to protect everybody. And this legislation that is going forward, I don't really know quite the full course of where it's going, where it is right now and stuff, but I have the draft of it here. And they give examples. It's called the No Artificial Intelligence Fake Replicas and Unauthorized Duplications Act of 2023.
Interesting.
But they give examples here of not just songwriters, Tom Hanks. They say AI technology was used to create false, non-consensual, intimate images of high school girls in Westfield, New Jersey.
Oh, my God.
Another music thing, the whole deep fake thing. So they can put you in a pornography.
Yes.
They can put you in a robbery. They can put you in, and this is the deep fake world, right? And so just ordinary citizens don't have any protections right now with this stuff. So this is bigger than a famous comedian or a dead actor or a live actor. This is about humanity having their autonomy and agency protected legally in this country.
It's huge. It is a huge issue that needs, does it say on there who the chief sponsor of this bill is, who this is coming from?
Yeah, it says Ms. Salazar introduced the following bill, but it's all blank, like the date and the number, all of that.
Probably
so I don't
know introduced
if it's
yet.
Actually been introduced yet, but I know something is moving through right now.
Well,
so
it
might be some version of this.
Right. And here's the thing. This technology, it like appeared and exploded. It's moving so fast. And we know that our government does not move that fast, but they need to. You know, look, part of it is even what I do is so hampered by the fact that they move at the speed of molasses. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 destroyed radio as we know it, as we knew it.
Yep. And Clinton.
Yes, thanks, Clinton. And the Digital Millennium Copyright Act is still the only thing that governs the internet, and it's from the same year, I believe it's 96, and it's antiquated. You know, there's no mechanism. The reason I can't play music on my podcast is because I simulcast on video on YouTube, and there's no mechanism to get clearance to play copyrighted music on YouTube. So I get copyright violated, even though it's like, give me a license. Let me buy a license so the people who create this stuff can be compensated. But there's not even a mechanism in place, right?
Yes. We'll all participate legally in the system.
Yes.
But
give us a way to do it.
It is.
Right?
Yeah, it is. You said it very well that the technology moves so quickly and it, you know, governmental institutions move at the, you know, the pace of sludge. You know, it's so slow.
Right.
So, and here we are in the middle of it. But it is, you know, it is, there's a lot, I think, simmering right now. And what's interesting is, you know, someone in one of those articles said, you know, oh, I thought this kind of mischief with AI was over a year ago. Like we had the Tom Brady thing and we've had the music stuff and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't think it's really been on people's radar that much. I mean, it was mine a little bit, but not, you know. And I really, I'm you know, in my own way, I'm kind of glad this happened because I have to say, it's kind of crazy. My original statement on Twitter has over 5 million views or impressions or whatever that is, whatever that statistic means. And has tens of thousands of retweets and things like that. I've never gotten traction like that before. I mean, you know, I tweet about Carl Jung and, you know, other stuff. And every once in a while, a comedy thing about my dad, if I'm promoting something for him, but it's huge and people are paying attention now. And, it's why I agreed to step forward and speak about it so much in the media, because we need every citizen to get that it's not a good idea to click on that special. And I know I probably got more eyeballs on it because I spoke about it, but
They might have anyway, because Kelly, honestly, look at this. This is the graphic.
Right.
And if I saw that, I got George Carlin. What is this like material that they found that had never been released before? Because that would be the logical explanation. But that's not the case at all. And I can only imagine your thought when you see this. It's like, how dare they?
Well, that's the thing is, it's, you know, then they call it an impression. And I'm like, yeah, but Rich Little, if he was doing an impression for an hour of someone, he would call it the Rich Little Hour doing, because he wants
credit for it.
Wants all the accolades. He wants the attention. He wants the, you know, he wants the pat on the back for it. And the fact that they did call it that, that they used that graphic, it is very confusing for sure. I agree. That's, that looks like something, you know, that a comic would use to make a little graphic for his special.
Yes. Yeah, and nothing on it said this is an AI representation of what we think George Carlin might do if he were around today. It might, there was some fine print at the very bottom that I couldn't see, no matter how big I blew it up. So that doesn't count in my book. If you can't see it, what it is, it's a, for those listening to audio, sorry, I forget sometimes. It's a spotlight on a mic stand on an empty stage, and it says, "I'm glad I'm dead," is the headline across the top, and below it, it says George Carlin. What are you supposed to think? And so, and the other thing is that Tom Brady thing that they did with AI, whenever it was taken down. They were sued over it, and they had to take it down. So why they thought they could get away with infringing on your dad's likeness and talents and material. Again, it is gray area because it hasn't been made into law yet. No, there's nothing to keep up with the technology. So now, much like your dad was at the forefront of another case, this could go to the Supreme Court. It could be another George Carlin, not Pacifica versus George Carlin, but ChatGPT versus Carlin. Who knows? But you know what? Your dad was enough of a cultural icon. I mean, the most brilliant comedian of my generation, for sure, that in my lifetime, that his name is big enough, his likeness big enough, that you could take this all the way to the Supreme Court if need be.
Yeah, it is pretty, it is pretty interesting that, you know, who knows, but that, you know, he was involved in such a big communications law. I mean, still media lawyers talk about that case to say, because it was a precedent setting case in the Supreme Court. You know, who knows? Who knows? But it's, yeah, it's, boy, you know, these times can't get any more interesting, Nicole.
I know. Enough of the interesting times. Let's have some boring times for a while.
I have to say, I had a great holiday season. I took 3 weeks off from everything. I really connected back to myself and my creative voice. And I planned my next 6 months out so that I'd have a little bit of time with my coaching business. And then every other week I'd really get to immerse into my creative process. I'm back to my writing process. I'm working on a new performance piece. I'm very excited about it. And this comes the first week I'm off.
Oh my God. You know, Kelly, I have to, in the few minutes we have left, talk about your coaching business, because you do have this sort of double life. You are a wonderful representative of your father. You wrote a Carlin Home Companion, which was a wonderful book. And then the companion one woman show you did along with it. You do have this creative side and the podcast and everything, but you also work with people. You are, I don't know, you have a master's in Jungian psychology.
I have a master's in counseling psychology with an emphasis on Jungian psychology. So I consider myself what they call a depth psychologist. And I'm also a certified life coach. I knew I didn't want to become a therapist after that, but I'm very interested in transformation, because that's all my writing is about, is my own journey of running into myself over and over again, and the ego, and I'm a practicing Buddhist and all of that. And then about 5 years ago, actually 7 years ago, my book came out in 2015. And then, you know, I was trying to work on a second book and was trying to figure out a way to kind of talk about what I had just lived through since 2008 in finding my creative voice and coming out of the shadow from my father, in facing my fears, my stage fright, all that kind of stuff. And I started to try to write a book. It didn't work out. And so I pivoted towards this coaching business, because I'd done coaching before my dad died. And it's really interesting how the curriculum of what I've created inside of it really does replicate the inner journey I went on. Mm. It's not like a nose on kind of a thing, but it is a couple of things, which is being able to rewrite your story as you're living it, being able to get out of your own way, the fears, and then being able to have the grit and the courage to step forward into the new life. And so those three kind of pillars land inside of my year-long program, which I call Humans on the Verge. And what I'm really excited about this year is that those three pillars are represented in three courses that I teach throughout the year, which are public courses too. So people can come and take a public course with us and or be inside of my coaching program and do the courses and get a lot of coaching and a lot of guidance, personal work done through that. So so I'm really excited about this year, about the coaching business. It really feels like it's hit its sweet spot. And in fact, at the end of this month, on Saturday the 27th, we're having our kickoff new year event called Light Your Year on Fire. And it's a half day event where we get people to, think about the year that they just lived, the year that they want to move into. And then we invite them to join us mid-February. We're starting our first course of the year called True Story, which is about dreaming into your next chapter of your life. And not from your strategic brain, not from your should brain, not from ego, but from your soul. And so we're really excited, this 8-week course. It takes you through a bunch of journal prompts and a bunch of ways that kind of expand your thinking and make you think not from your left brain, but more from your right brain, to really for you to understand what story you've been living and what story you want to live into now.
You know, and I got to say, I did a workshop with you. It's like a 6-week long one, and it's wonderful. And you're you. And that's the thing. It's not some stodgy like life coach. Not that life coaches are stodgy, but the image that we have, it's Kelly Carlin. And you have a vocabulary like mine. The F word,
yes,
just
I do.
Flies
I
off the
girl.
And it's because it's how people talk, and it's so relatable, and it's important work. We all need, we are an ongoing project, and you got to keep working on it, or it gets stale, or it doesn't grow. You need to nurture it. You need to care for it.
I mean, Nicole, we are part of nature. Nature is always changing. Look at the seasons.
That's right.
We all have different seasons in our life. And whether you're moving from summer to fall or fall to winter or winter to spring or spring to summer, does not matter. There's a transition in there somewhere. And especially those of us over 40, 45, life is different on this side of that century mark, especially over 50. I just turned 60 last year. Mm-hmm. It really is about, how do I want to be more authentic? How do I want to be more courageous? And not in like, I have to go conquer the world, but just even stepping out of your own comfort zone takes a lot of courage and grit.
Yes.
And I'm just so dedicated to helping people find their true self, live their true story, walk their path via their true north. And those are the names of all my courses. That's why they're called that. Yeah. And it's, it's like, it's deep inside of me. And no matter how much of a creative life I live and how big that gets or small that gets, whatever phase I'm in with that, I'm deeply dedicated to this work on the planet for this species also. I mean, come on, humans, we got to get our stuff together because we are on the verge, literally.
Yes. Now, KellyCarlin.com, can people get information about these there? Or where should they go?
No, my website's crap. Don't go there. Follow me on Instagram.
Okay.
I'm at Kelly Carlin is here.
Okay. I need
follow me on Twitter, Kelly_Carlin.
Right.
My link tree on both of those will get you to my courses, will get you to Humans on the Verge. If you do go on my website, a little window will pop up and say, join my mailing list.
Okay.
That's get everything from me then, especially my courses and stuff like that.
I'm on your mailing. I get your Monday musings. It's great.
You get my Monday musings.
Course.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're working on my website right now. That was like a thing that just I've ignored way too long. But yeah, hit me up on the socials. I'm there. And get on my mailing list. You'll be able to find out whatever you need. And my Light Your Year on Fire, if you type that into Eventbrite, you can get a ticket. And we've got, I believe there is a early bird special still up there for a couple more days. So grab it.
Well, I'll look for that and I'll post it on the blog where I post today's show. So people
can
find it.
Awesome.
Kelly Carlin, she is exactly who we're talking to here. You're the best. I'm so glad you're fighting this. I'll stay on top of it and keep the listeners informed on what's going on, because this is a big deal and it's only going to get bigger before it gets solved. So Protect your dad's legacy at all costs, as you, like you need me to say that. But, you know, Kelly Carlin, we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Nicole.
Stick around. Coming up next on the broadcast, the Green News Report. We'll be right back.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. Welcome back to the Bradcast. I am Bradcast producer Desi Doyen, joined by guest host Nicole Sandler. We are running a bit late, not a surprise, because we always do. So let's get right to it, our latest Green News Report.
Do we want courts to fill that gap, or do we want an agency to fill that gap?
Supreme Court's right-wing supermajority appears ready to gut federal agency authority on environmental regulations and more. Social media sites profiting off new breed of climate denial, new study finds. Plus,
more and more cars file in, all dealing with the impacts of this bitter cold. The most popular problem, a dead battery.
Frigid Arctic air strands drivers of both electric and gasoline cars. All those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Desi Doyen. Brad Friedman is out today. Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Energy is so big, it's such a big deal, that when energy goes up, if you make donuts, if you make hamburgers, if you, anything you do, it's all energy.
He's right. He's right. It's all energy. With enough energy, America can achieve anything we could possibly imagine, from donut to hamburger.
This is your Brad-free Green News Report.
And someday, if we achieve fusion, perhaps the hambonut.
Okay, Brad is still fighting a rebound case of COVID and will be back soon. In his absence, let's get on to today's green news. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week in a lawsuit seeking to overturn a landmark legal precedent that underpins federal agency authority to craft environmental and climate regulations. The lawsuit was brought by a right-wing legal group funded in part by fossil fuel billionaire Charles Koch. It's a vehicle to tear down the Chevron deference. That's a precedent that stipulates that judges who are not experts should defer to agency experts' reasonable interpretations of any ambiguous law that Congress has delegated the agency to carry out. On Wednesday, in oral arguments, the right-wing supermajority appeared ready to overturn the Chevron deference, while the liberal justices on the court warned that doing so would create chaos and put unelected judges in control of policy decisions to insert their own partisan or ideological preferences. Here's Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson.
I'm worried about the courts becoming Uber legislators. The question is, who's going to make the choice as between what those meanings are? If we're talking about a policy question, there are several reasonable meanings. Why should the court be the one to make that determination?
Good question. In other news, now that strong majorities of the public accept climate science and that global warming is caused by human activities, a new analysis finds that YouTube is profiting off of a wave of new denial that has shifted away from false claims outright denying climate change. The study by the Center for Countering Digital Hate found that content creators are using new tactics to evade social media site policies that combat misinformation. And now they focus on undermining climate and clean energy solutions, like falsely claiming they're unworkable or unreliable. Attacks on renewable energy now make up the majority of false claims on sites like YouTube. The U.S. is grappling with a brutal outbreak of frigid Arctic air, but the rest of the planet is actually experiencing an unusually warm January, the hottest yet recorded for this time of year globally since record-keeping began in the mid-1800s. The most comprehensive study yet of the Greenland ice sheet finds that the island is losing 20% more ice mass than previously thought due to warming from man-made climate change. Scientists have already confirmed that the Arctic is warming 3 to 4 times faster than the rest of the planet, which is accelerating Greenland's ice melt and contributing to rising sea levels. But it's also releasing a significant amount of fresh water into the ocean, which scientists warn has the potential to weaken key ocean currents that help regulate global temperatures. The blast of frigid Arctic air in the United States has caused electric vehicle car owners to suffer a severe drop in battery range, and Tesla supercharger stations in the Chicago area even failed, stranding drivers. But experts with AAA warned that all car batteries, both gas and electric, can fail in sub-zero temperatures. They urge drivers to check on their car batteries and take extra precautions ahead of extreme cold. And finally, good news for anything that breathes on the island of Oahu, Hawaii. The state has shut down its last polluting coal plant to meet its goal of ending the burning of fossil fuels for electricity by 2045. The island replaced that coal plant with renewable energy and a massive utility-scale battery, one of the largest standalone batteries in the world that is delivering cheap, clean power back to the grid as needed. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter at Green News Report. Brad will be back soon. I'm Desi Doyen, and this has been your Green News Report. Only the lonely.
Oh, another great Green News Report. This one by solo Desi Doyen.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Yep.
And that's going to do it for us for today. Thanks to our special guest, Kelly Carlin. You can find me and my show at NicoleSandler.com and at Nicole Sandler on most of the socials and all that. Brad, hopefully we'll be back soon.
Yes. Yes, hopefully. And thank you, Nicole, so much for being the captain of our ship today. And thanks to you, our listeners, for spending a portion of your day or night with us. Yes, Brad should be back soon. We certainly do miss him. And if you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it for free at bradblog.com. And that is a service made possible by those of you who stop by bradblog.com/donate. You can email us at bradcast@bradblog.com and follow us on the Facebooks, Twitters, and Mastodons at The Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you here next time, hopefully with Brad.
And until then, stay safe, wear a mask,
yes.
Get boosted. And as Brad likes to say, good luck, world.
You got a taste.